Anyway, let us move on for the moment. A hotel in Rooski made the headlines in recent months after two arson attacks. It's the Shannon Key West Hotel. It was to be opened as an accommodation centre for asylum seekers, but it was confirmed this week by the Department of Justice and Equality that it's not in a position to proceed with plans to open the accommodation centre because of, quote, difficulties with the lease agreement. Patsy McGarry, religious correspondent, religious affairs correspondent with the Irish Times, joins me now. Patsy, you're from Ballyhadrin, which is not too far from Rooski, but you like to make those definitions very clear about
borders. We're at the other
borders.
End of the
county. You have a hard border between
55 kilometres.
How did you react to what happened? Because Rooski or Ballyhadrin got all sorts of praise and awards and everything for how they handled it, but they didn't want it in the first place.
Well, when it was announced in 2017, and it was a fait accompli, there was a lot of nervousness in the town as to what this would mean. The town already has approximately 200 Pakistanis living there out of a population of about 2,000. Above all, the hotel that was to be used for the EROC Centre, this is the Emergency Reception Orientation Centre, people locally were building tourism plans around it reopening. And when it was taken over by this Cork consortium, that was believed was going to happen. It didn't happen. And there was grave disappointment about that. And really, the feeling was more disappointment about that than about the Syrians, etc., arriving in the town. And to be very, very fair, and I'm very proud to be able to say this, the people of the town rose magnificently to, first of all, in preparations for the Syrians to arrive, a young group, a Feroiga group, prepared a wall of welcome, which is a very unusual concept in these times, and they got an award for that. And then when they did arrive, the local GA club, soccer club, cricket club went out of their way to help these kids, bring them along to try and make them feel at home as much as possible. So, and they got then last April.
Why did that happen? There was one woman in particular that you drew attention to.
The magnificent Mary Galler, who was interviewed on TV and radio and came out with that terrific line, how could we say no? And she was talking in the context of this young boy that was found on a Greek beach in 2015.
We'll
Aaron
never
Curdy.
Forget the image, yeah.
And Mary brought up that image, and of course that resonated with everybody at home in Ballyhadrin itself. And I mean, that set the thing in, the tone for the thing. A Syrian journalist here, Razan Ibrahim, went down to Ballyhadrin, met Mary, went around the town and met the local people and wrote what she called a love letter to the people of Ballyhadrin. And of course, last April, they got the Community of the Year Award in the Rehab Awards. All hugely deserved, but it hasn't ended there. I mean, last night, a week ago, on the 16th of March, the GAA hosted a cultural night, Irish traditional music and Syrian traditional music in the town itself. And in the St. Patrick's Day parade last week, they took part too.
The standard fears that you hear articulated about doctors and school places?
All very valid. I mean, Ballyhadrin has two doctors, and the great fear was that the doctors would not be able to cope. And that was a valid fear. There was also a fear that there was only one primary school in the town and that it wouldn't be able to cope either. And it seems initially that the plans of the department were to send those kids to the local primary school, which have created all sorts of difficulties because the kids didn't have English. So there was a separate system put in place to teach English to the kids in the EROC centre. And it should be pointed out, by the way, there is a difference between these type of centres and what was planned for Rooski. EROC, there was only three of them set up in Ireland, and they were in response to the Libyan stroke Syrian crisis, people drowning in the Mediterranean. In 2015, actually, there was a march organised to commemorate those 1,500 people who were frog marched from Strokestown to Dublin by the bailiffs and put on ships as it happened, Grosse Ile in Canada, half of whom, 700, died. And actually, on the Sunday it started, 700 people were drowned in the Mediterranean. And that was the context in which these...
A connection,
Yes. And it was highlighted by our own experience in the famine. Mary Gallagher was aware of that. Enda Kenny was aware of that and drew attention to it at the time as Taoiseach. So all that fed into the EROC type situation.
So bring me to Rooski.
Rooski is different because it's a direct provision centre. And these go back further to the late 90s here in Ireland, and they are about people who are applying for asylum. People who came into Ballyhadrine had refugee status. They could live and work. They can live and work. And it's only a temporary situation. A clearance house, if you like, for them until they're housed elsewhere. And in fact, I mean, most of them have been housed, about two-thirds. And of course, there's a flow through continuously. Ruski, I mean, there are people looking for citizenship, and they go through that torturous process that could take, it takes an average of about 23 months now. There are 38 of these centres in 17 counties throughout Ireland. There's one not too far from Ruski in Longford, so people in Ruski will be familiar with the tardy process involved. There's 74 people there in Longford itself. Most incredibly, there's 500 in Ballyhaunas, which, and as it goes back to
but
one of the oldest.
Ballyhaunas has absorbed all sorts of cultures because of the meat plants.
And the same as Ballyhadrine, because that's how the Pakistani population came to Ballyhadrine, because the Sharifiq opened the halal factory in Ballyhaunas in the 1970s. The first purpose-built mosque in Ireland is in Ballyhaunas. And then he opened a second.
So bring me to Ruski.
Well, come back to Ruski, if you insist. they, clearly, people, it's a small village of about 600 people, and there are 80 people planned for that hotel. And of course, there's no public transport system. There is in Ballyhadrine. There's no train either through Ruski. There's none in Ballyhadrine, by the way, either. But so there were genuine concerns about this very large population into a small community. And I can understand
that. 82 is that large?
80 out of 600. There were concerns about support systems, about education, about schools, about medical care, etc. All of that. Now, I have to add as well, that always in these instances, it happened in Listowel in 2018 as well, you have people raising these same concerns, and you do have to wonder whether they're being used as a vehicle that says, keep them out, we don't want them, and there's a hint of racism there.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a woman who came on at a protest in Ruski and said, we are not racist in Ruski, and I don't believe the people in Ruski are racist. One of my oldest friends is from there, and there isn't a racist bone in his body. And I'll hold you to that, you owe me a pint. it was played upon and successfully. And I mean, when the announcement was made about the Syrians coming to Ballyhadrine, there were leaflets circulated in the town, not by people in the town, but by outsiders who didn't want them coming into the town. People who are driven by just exploiting the situation for their own narrow racist purposes.
Yeah, and afraid of, you know, the foreigner coming in. I mean, there was a lot of criticism.
Can
for
I just
the
say
department.
One thing? One more thing, Marion. Our direct provision system has been a disgrace. I mean, there are people in it at the moment, about 300 who have been in there for 5 years. My colleague Sorka Pollock had a piece in the paper on Friday, a family who are now living in Athlone who have been in it for 12 years. Enforced incarceration. Until last year, they weren't allowed to work. Now they are in very restricted circumstances. They get €20 something a week. In some instances, they can't even cook for themselves. So, I mean, the classic simple solution to it is to speed up the process. I mean, it says it takes about 2 years now, but I think on the other end, if people are within that system for a certain period of time, they should get automatic
citizenship. That has been suggested. Yeah. Mary, you wanted to come in there?
Hi, Jean.
I'm
50% Roscommon, and so it's a part of the world I'm familiar with.
You can play for the county.
My father's from a beautiful little village called Tarmanbarry, which I'm going to describe as a suburb of Ruski now, just to wind him up while
it's
he's
on the right
the radio.
Side of the Shannon. That's
on the right, absolutely, on the right side of the Shannon fields that ran right down to the Shannon. And I certainly personally got kind of crossed during the week when I saw people using the word Ruski as a kind of synonym for NIMBYism and racism. They're very welcoming people.
Well, two arson attacks are not to be dismissed.
No, for sure. But I think a lot of the protest that was involved down there was genuinely in relation to facilities. And I spoke to a friend of mine yesterday who works in the refugee law space, and she talked about one of these direct provision centres in another part of the country where it's, you know, 14 miles outside the nearest town. I mean, I can live 14 miles outside of town because, I have a car and I have family and I have deep connections to a place. If you come from Sudan and you come from a war zone or something and you come in, you don't have those kind of resources. So it genuinely isn't a racism thing. And I do agree with what Patsy said. You know, there's people who come in and who kind of take over these kind of situations and who kind of do a bit of racist stirring.
Can I just make a point there?
There's genuine concerns there about the resources that people do need. And direct provision is an absolute national disgrace. It is.
Well,
it
I have
be,
to say that the dreariest places and the saddest places that I've ever been, though I think they have improved a tad.
It's important to make the point, and Jean, I'm sure, will agree, that it is believed that the two arson attacks were not, and nothing to do with local people. there were outside, they believe that it was outsiders that were responsible.
Well, was anybody ever charged?
Not yet. The guards are investigating.
That's your point, isn't
no,
it?
No, that's very much my point. I think it's, first and foremost, this was a crime. Whether it was two crimes or three crimes, I don't know, but it was least attempt at arson or arson, incitement to hatred, perhaps. It's a lot of different crimes, and I think it should be dealt with like that, and I think these people should be brought to justice. We should know who they are, and I quite accept that they're unlikely to be from the area. But we're lucky in Ireland that we haven't had what has happened in other places, but it could happen here. And we have to deal with it and nip it in the bud, and I think part of that is bringing these people to justice. I also was very struck today when I was looking through the papers, and this issue I knew might come up, and there was a headline which was "Village Under Stress." So I thought, "Oh, it's Ruskin and it's Donnybrook." And I'm thinking, why don't we have a direct provision in Donnybrook on some of the RTE lands? And I can understand if you're in a small village, you know, and if you're not consulted with properly, you are wondering what.
I wonder about the consultation, and I've wondered about it right through from County Clare to Ballyhadreen to where they didn't do consultations, possibly because they figured that if they raised the question of consultation, it would be no way, Jose.
I think that is a very valid point. You are supplying a platform for the naysayers, and they're always the loudest voice.
Yeah.
And not the instinctive decency of the local people. And they would take over. And I think that, and I wrote at the time, that the government wasn't right when it came to Ballyhadreen. They were right, rather, not to have a consultation.
And I think there's a really interesting point of contrast with, not to bring everything back to Brexit, but it all goes back to Brexit. If you look at the resources that the state put into making our passport office, you know, really efficient to a degree, there's actually a level of national pride at how quickly we turn our passport applications. And we have 820,000 new Irish passports issued last year, something like 2,000 or 2,500 asylum applications. Now, there is a country mile difference between the complexity of the processes. I'm not saying they're the same.
The sad thing about the mishandling of this, and the direct provision is the most obvious example of it, probably the degree of consultation and giving too much platform to the naysayers, maybe giving more of background culture to acceptance of it, is we're doing so little in the context of international, what is happening with refugees internationally. Countries I travel to, Kenya has nearly 2 million of them in from Somalia. Turkey will have 3 million. We're talking about tens of thousands. We're not even at the level that the Scandinavian countries are, which is what we should be aspiring to. If we should be getting this right at the very basic level with the small number we have, and building up to more, because we really need to do more. People are still drowning in the Mediterranean.
We're world class at speaking out of both sides of our mouth on this. The number of asylum applications in Ireland has actually dropped dramatically over the last decade. There shouldn't be a problem. The system of direct provision is an absolute disgrace. And I think the Department of Justice decision here is attributed to legal difficulties. They're not quite specified what those are.
Well, I was reading the background, there are complex issues as well.
The optics of it are terrible because it looks like the department has given in to racism.
Yeah. But that is not the case, to be very fair to the department. In this case, there have been ongoing wranglings going on between the owner of the hotel and the lessee of the hotel, and it hasn't been resolved.
I think that in terms of direct provision now, I think we should entertain an amnesty for people who have been a certain amount of time in these direct provision and just deal with it. Right. The second thing is that Ireland has a higher percentage of immigrants now than Britain has. We don't seem to realise that. 18% of the population here were not born in this country. It's 16% in Britain. And immigration, or even moving from the country to the city, whatever, is an act of personal transformation. When people get up in the morning and say, I'm going to move, what they're saying is, I'm going to change me, I'm going to change my circumstances, and I'm going to believe in a better future for me and my kids. And what we see in Ireland with immigration is the immigrants have contributed enormously to this country and will continue. And it strikes me that direct provision allows a tiny minority, but maybe a significant minority, who are afraid of the other and the foreign, to be more and more vocal. If you gave an amnesty to people in direct provision, the economy suggests right now that these people would act, that act of personal transformation would kick in, they'd get jobs, get themselves together, they do a Ballyhadreen on it. And we need to understand that we now are a very mixed society, big immigration, and it has worked.
Well, somebody was talking to me yesterday about Germany and Merkel's big decision and so on. But that when those, I think it was a million came, that the preparations were unbelievable. Within a fortnight, everybody was sorted out with German lessons. Accommodation had been laid on. Consideration had been... But she was getting some of the best educated people in the Middle East into her society as well as her economy.
The Syrians are the best educated people in the Middle East. And the people who have moved in Syria en masse have been urban Syrians. And they have also been the best educated of the best educated. So Germany has done, but again, she's taken big flack for it too.
She sure has, yes, Patsy.
David made the point about 18% of our population being immigrants. Let's look at it the other way. 17% of our own people have immigrated, over 15. We have the highest number of immigrants, as in leaving the country, of any country in the developed world. I mean, and we're an immigrant people ourselves. We should understand immigration, and we should understand from our history.
This is the point of personal transformation. You transform yourself. You say, I'm going to be a different person.
Do you think it is to do that if somebody doesn't look foreign, i.e. colour?
Eastern European,
grand. But somebody of a different colour, not so grand.
I don't think, actually, ordinary day-to-day life in Ireland, I don't think there's been a problem with that.
But there are really dangerous currents circulating on the internet, Facebook groups, on YouTube channels, and all of them are seeking to propagate hate in one shape or another. And this is a real challenge, I think, for the state, not just in the context of places like Ruski, as Patsy has said, but standing back from this for our society, I think that if we look at 2030, if we jump 12 years ahead, we should be planning for 25% of our population having been born elsewhere. We have to think about that, and we have to think about what integration actually means.
The other thing is, when one travels and, as they say, go out foreign, one of the things that's terrific is to go into cities that have people in it from all over the world. It gives a special vibe. And yet we seem to be afraid of that.
Everybody around this table grew up in a very homogenous Ireland where it was sort of, your exposure to culture was pretty limited. It is a joy to go into these great multicultural cities of Europe and places like Brussels with their huge African populations, and everybody in the city celebrates it. Even the people who sometimes march against immigration can be found at the market buying the... one of the truisms since the Second World War is that immigration enriches the country that people move to, and it brings talent, it also brings entrepreneurship. And parts of rural Ireland have seen a century of decline, you know, inability to stay, to field GA teams, things like that. And in some of them, they've been saved by the existing immigration. Now, the existing immigration is not from Syria. The existing immigration is Germans and French and people like that who decide to retire. And you can see schools in West Kerry, in the Gaeltacht regions in West Kerry, where people are speaking in Irish. Irish is their working language, but their surnames are from a mix of Western European countries, it tends to be. Immigration is good. And that message cannot be reinforced early and often enough.
Right. Last word, yes.
Yeah, can I just come in there? I agree with everything that you've said, but we aren't really different from other people. And if you look at the rise of populism around Europe, if you look at France, if you look at Belgium, if you look at the Netherlands, if you look at Austria, if you look at even the Scandinavian countries, and if you look at Brexit, there is a huge pushback. And what I'm saying is, it can happen here. We have to be on top of it. And we have to assume that it could happen. And what are we going to do to stop it happening?
And thankfully, Mary, we don't have a single political party sending out those messages. But you're absolutely right. Be vigilant.
Okay. Okay. On that note, we are going to take a break. Back after this.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.